Genesis 31. For 11 years, I worked in fields of southern Idaho, 11 summers, mostly with potato fields. And I remember one time I thought, since I got out there, you know, before sunup generally, this would be a great song to sing. Holy, 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 Lord God Almighty. Early in the morning, my song will rise to thee. So I tried singing, and since I was all alone out there in those fields, I thought, I can sing it out loud. But I couldn't because I had to walk through the field, and I just could not sing and walk. You know, I thought I could chew gum and walk, but I couldn't sing and walk. And that, in a strange, quirky way, gave me an appreciation for opera singers who sing as they walk across stage. I thought, man, I didn't think it'd be that hard, but I just had to sing silently to the Lord instead of out there scaring the birds or whatever. But it's a great song. Genesis 31. I want to do tonight begin, do an introduction to the biblical covenants. Not covenant theology, but the covenants that are in the Bible that God has made with man. And tonight's the introduction. The word covenant in the Old Testament comes from a Hebrew word that means cutting. So you might hear or read, I think I didn't actually look it up, but I remember hearing to cut a covenant. Because the word, the Hebrew word, is cutting. In the Old Testament, the same word is also translated league or confederacy. In the New Testament, the Greek word generally meant will, like last will and testament. Will or disposition. And it makes me think of a legal term, you know, a legal disposition. That's deposition, I guess. Scratch that. Disposition. In the New Testament, the word is also translated testament as well as covenant. So the New Testament is the new covenant. The Old Testament, the old covenant. So that's just the word itself. In Genesis 31, you there yet? Verse 43. Read 43 to 53. Okay, now the background of this, Jacob has somewhat deceitfully, living up to his name, has taken his four wives, the two that are Laban's daughters, as well as their two handmaids, and all his children, and fled at night. And Laban has now caught up with him. Okay? Now, Laban was just as deceitful and conniving as Jacob. And so that's poetic justice that Jacob, the deceiver, would have as a father-in-law, the same kind of man. So Jacob, or Laban, has caught up with him, and they're kind of arguing back and forth. And jumping in the middle here, verse 43. Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters, these are my daughters. These children are my children, the grandchildren there. And these cattle are my cattle. All that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters, unto their children which have been born, which they have born? Okay. So he said, I'm not going to destroy you. I'm not going to attack them because they're my family. But, he proposes in verse 44, come therefore, now therefore come thou. Let us make a covenant, I and thee, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap. And they did eat there upon the heap. And Laban called it Jigar Sahadutha. But Jacob called it Gilead. Now, both of those words mean the same thing. Laban was speaking in the Chaldean language, and Jacob was speaking in Hebrew. It means the heap of witness, or the pile of witness. And Laban said, verse 48, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Gilead and Mizpah. For he said, he being Laban there, the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. And this verse is a classic verse that's taken out of context. First time it was a girl whose fiancé gave her the necklace because they were going to be parted. I don't know, for some reason She was still in college, and he had to go back home and work for some more. But the Lord watched between me and thee when we were absent one from another. And I thought, man, that sounds really cool. Okay, Lord, watch over my beloved while I can't be there. But the context is, the Lord watched so you don't come and invade my territory while I'm gone. All right? It wasn't a loving thing. It was a I don't trust you, and you don't trust me. And so we'll set this covenant up. How do I know that? Look in verse 50. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives besides my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness twixt me and thee. Okay? There's a lot of land separating us, and there's nobody here to check. And so I'm calling God to watch so you don't hurt me. Verse 51, Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, and behold this pillar, which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be witness, and this pillar be witness, that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge twixt us. And Jacob sware by the fear of his father Isaac. And so here's a very descriptive account of two men who are not trusting each other, making a covenant, cutting a covenant, so to speak. Now, the textbook definition of covenant goes like this. It's a compact or an agreement, okay, between individuals, two individuals, or between tribes, two tribes, or between nations, in which each party bound himself, obligated himself to fulfill certain conditions, and in exchange for me doing this, I'm going to get this benefit, this advantage. And so each party had to fulfill, I will do this, and I will get this. I will do this, and I will get this in return. And when it was someone who was a God-fearing, God was solemnly invoked as a witness. An oath was taken, was sworn. And oftentimes a gift was given, or as in this case, stones were set up as a memorial. Now if you turn to Genesis 21, an earlier covenant, Genesis 21, verse 25, this is between Abraham and Abimelech. And Abimelech was probably a title, like Pharaoh. There were several pharaohs, and the Bible calls them all Pharaoh. There are several Abimelechs, and Abimelech was probably a title. Genesis 21, verse 25. And Abraham reproved Abimelech because of a well of water, which Abimelech's servants had violently taken away. And Abimelech said, I would not, I knew not. Who hath done this thing? Neither didst thou tell me, neither yet heard I of it, but today. He says, I have no clue what you're talking about. I don't know who did it, and I never heard about it until you just told me. And Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them unto Abimelech, and both of them made a covenant. And Abraham set seven ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. And Abimelech said unto Abraham, what mean these seven ewe lambs which thou hast set by themselves? And he said, Abraham speaking now, for these seven ewe lambs thou shalt take of my hand, shalt thou take of my hand, that they may be a witness unto me that I have digged this well. Therefore he called that place Beersheba, which means the well of an oath, because there they swear both of them. And they made it, thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. Okay? So they made a covenant, and their gift was given, seven ewe lambs, as a memorial, as a witness that, yes, that was the, like people would today, you sign a contract, get it notarized. That was the same idea. This is final. It's sealed. It's done. It can't be broken. And a breach of the covenant, of a covenant, was considered a very heinous sin. Okay, turn to Ezekiel 17. Breaching a covenant was a very serious thing, a heinous sin. The background to this chapter in Ezekiel 17. Ezekiel is prophesying judgment on Jerusalem. Why? Well, Babylon had came in. Babylon, remember, invaded Israel 3 times. The last time they just destroyed the temple and wiped it all out Jerusalem. But this was one of the earlier ones. Babylon had come because God brought them in to punish his people for their sin, mostly of idolatry. But in that first invasion, Babylon made Zedekiah a vassal king, a king who was their puppet, okay, subject to Babylon. Babylon had taken royalty, taken leaders, the mighty men, to Babylon, left Judah in a very weakened position. All their leaders were gone. Their mighty men, the army commanders, strongmen, were gone. Left Judah understandably weak because they'd just been conquered. And the king of Babylon had made a covenant with Zedekiah, the king of Israel at that time. Zedekiah broke that covenant that he had sworn in the Lord's name. And what did he swear to? He was going to submit to Babylon. And that's what the prophets, Jeremiah and Ezekiel, had been prophesying. Submit to Babylon. God says, submit to Babylon and you will live. But they didn't. So Zedekiah here broke that covenant that he swore in the Lord's name. And he broke it by appealing to Egypt for military help. Come help me so I can throw off the yoke of Egypt. And look how God views this. Okay? That's the background. Ezekiel 17, verse 11. Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, me being Ezekiel, saying, say now to the rebellious house, know ye not what these things mean? Tell them, behold, the king of Babylon is come to Jerusalem, and hath taken the king thereof, and the princes thereof, and led them with him to Babylon, taken them back to Babylon, and hath taken of the king's seed, and made a covenant with him, and hath taken an oath of him. That's referring to Zedekiah. He hath also taken the mighty of the land, that the kingdom might be base, weak, that it might not lift itself up, but that by keeping of his covenant, it might stand. Right? You see how God is arranging this in his providence. He's saying, I told you guys to submit. You didn't. So they had to come in and take some of you away, made a covenant, and took the leaders away so that you would be weak, so that you would stand. Just the opposite of the way we think. They're weak politically, weak militarily. Why? So that they would survive. That way, God was kind of forcing them to do his wish. Verse 15. But he, Zedekiah, rebelled against him, the king of Babylon, in sending his ambassadors into Egypt, that they might give him horses and much people. Shall he prosper? Shall the king who broke the covenant, and it's in 2 Chronicles 36 where it says, he made the covenant in the Lord's name. Shall he prosper? Shall he escape that doeth such things? Or shall he break the covenant and be delivered? And what's the answer to all these things? What's the implied answer? It's a rhetorical question. No. The king of Israel, Zedekiah, is not going to prosper when he breaks a covenant that he made in my name. As I live, saith the Lord, God, surely in the place where the king dwelleth that hath made him king, whose oath he despised and whose covenant he brake, okay, this king. Now notice how in verse 13 there's a progression. Verse 13 to 16 to 19. Whose covenant did he break? Whose covenant did he make? In verse 13, he said he made a covenant. The king of Babylon made a covenant with the king of Israel. They took an oath. But now in verse 16, it starts to morph. Whose oath he despised, whose covenant he break. Even with him in the midst of Babylon, he shall die. King of Zedekiah is going to be taken down to Babylon and die there. Neither shall Pharaoh, with his mighty army and great company, make for him in war by casting up mounts and building forts to cut off many persons. Egypt's army is not going to benefit. He's not going to help you. I'm not going to allow Egypt to help you to rebel against Babylon. It's not going to happen. Verse 18, seeing he despised the oath by breaking the covenant, when lo, he had given his hand, like shaking hands, he sealed the deal. It's not going to happen. And hath done all these things, he shall not escape. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, as I live, as I live. Does God live? Yes, God lives forever. He is life. As I live, surely mine oath that he hath despised, and my covenant that he hath broken, even it will I recompense upon his own head. I will spread my net upon him. He shall be taken in my snare, and I will bring him to Babylon, and will plead with him there for his trespass that he hath trespassed against the king of Babylon. And as the king and king, king of Israel, made the covenant with the king of Babylon. When they made a covenant and they invoked God's name, that was a covenant with God. Doesn't matter if it's between me and Chad. If we bring God involved, as God is our witness, and we swear by God, now it's I made a covenant with God, Chad made a covenant with God. That's why breaking the covenant was a serious sin. And God says, verse 21, all his fugitives with all his bands shall fall by the sword. They that remain shall be scattered toward all winds, and ye shall know that I, the Lord, have spoken it. God holds his name very highly. And when we vow a vow, and when we call God to witness, and now my mind just, I can't help, but my didn't intend to go there. I thought this needs to be fleshed out much fuller. But think of your marriage vow. We are gathered today before God and these witnesses to join this man and this woman together. That is a covenant bringing God into play. And the breaking of that covenant is a serious sin. And God will not go lightly when his name, his word is broken. Now, there is forgiveness, but there's still consequences. So God says, this covenant that you made with the pagan king, and probably he had to make it under duress. But in 2 Chronicles 36, it says he swore by the name of the Lord. And even in that, God expects us, or in this case, Zedekiah, to follow through with the conditions he agreed to. Now, in addition to the ceremonies, if you call them that, of an oath, gifts, and piling rocks, making a pillar, there are often certain other ceremonies that accompanied the establishment of covenant. Just like, again, I'll go back to marriage. What do we do when we have a wedding? We have a ceremony. We have things, and they're different. You know, Phil and Adriana's wedding ceremony was different than mine, and Martha's different than yours and your husband, if you're or wife, if you're married. Different, but they contained a lot of the similar things. It was a solemn occasion, joyous, yes, but solemn, and it marked that something special is happening. Similarly with this, if you turn to Genesis 15, ceremony that accompanied the establishing of a covenant. And now, I'll just read two verses of this because later on, this is a covenant we're going to look at, okay? Because this is a covenant that God is making with man, with a man called Abraham. And we're going to come back and look at it later in detail, but right now, Genesis 15, verses 9 and 10. I'm looking at the ceremony that accompanied it. And he, God, said unto him, Abraham, God said to Abraham, take me a heifer of 3 years old, and a she-goat of 3 years old, and a ram of 3 years old, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he took them all, he, Abraham, took them all unto him. He took unto him, Abraham took unto God all these. And Abraham divided them in the midst, and laid one piece one against the other, but the birds divided he not. And so he cut the animals in half. Put one half over here, one half over here. So the heifer, which is a young cow, a cow that hasn't yet calved. It's a female cow. And the goat and the ram. He cut those in half, but then he laid one turtle dove and a pigeon side by side, because when you cut a bird, there's not a lot left. What did they do that for? Remember the word covenant means cutting. They cut an animal in half, and the parties involved in the covenant would pass between the halves, right? Which was a way of signifying, yes, I agree to this covenant. I am passing between the cuttings. I am fully understanding that I am making this covenant. I agree to it. And it was signifying, if I break the covenant, may this happen to me. May it be like me being split in two. That's how highly God thought, and the people there thought of the covenant. It's also in Jeremiah 34, verses 18 and 20. Jeremiah 34, similar ceremony. Jeremiah 34. Now, Jeremiah was around 580 B.C. Abraham was about 2,000. So we're talking 1,500 years later. What occurred 1,500 years before today? Like 516 A.D.? We're talking Roman Empire's crumbling. Not exactly, somewhere around here that split, and the Germanic tribes were invading and destroying Rome. Something that they did then, bringing up to now, still practicing it? That's a long established custom. So this is what the difference between Genesis 15, Abraham, and now we're in Jeremiah 34. What did I say? Verse 18. And I will give the men that have transgressed my covenant, God speaking, which have not performed the words of the covenant which they had made before me when they cut the calf in twain in two and passed between the parts thereof, the princes of Judah, the princes of Jerusalem, the eunuchs, the priests, and all the people of the land which passed between the parts of the calf. I will even give them into the hands of their enemy and into the hand of them that seek their life, and their dead bodies shall be for meat to the fowls of the air, to the beasts of the field, beasts of the earth, scavengers. People of Israel, God's people, made a covenant, and they broke it, and God said, I'm going to turn you over to be killed. God views covenants highly. Another ceremony was eating a common meal. And when we read about Jacob and Laban, they sat on their pile of rocks and they ate a meal. Right? So there's a common meal. Also, I'm not going to read it, but Abimelech, another king of... was Abimelech the king of? One of the tribes around. One of the peoples that were not Syrians, one of those countries. And Isaac made a covenant and they ate a meal. Abimelech made a feast for them. So you got cutting animals apart, eating a meal together, sharing salt, right? And I don't know, the Bible doesn't give many details. Somehow they shared salt, whether they, wasn't in shakers, probably their blocks or ground up. And they shared salt and they tasted the salt. I eat your salt, you eat my salt. That was a covenant of salt. Why salt? Well, it doesn't say specifically, so this is a thought. Salt is a preservative to preserve the covenant. Okay, we're doing it, and salt was valuable. Sometimes salt was considered money, and so we're trading something of significance, and we're going to extend this and preserve, keep this covenant, a covenant of salt. And it's mentioned in Numbers 18, 19. It's also mentioned in 2 Chronicles 13, 5. Numbers 18, 19, 2 Chronicles 13, 5. And it just says they made a covenant of salt. Okay? Doesn't give much other than that. There was a pagan practice. The Israelites didn't practice this in establishing a covenant, but they would cut their veins, doesn't say, and drink each other's blood. Not a whole lot, just a little, symbolically. And that made me think of those movies I saw with the white man and the Indian, and they slit their wrists and tie them together and become what? Blood brothers, right? And what was that for? That was establishing a covenant. They didn't call it a covenant, but it's the exact same idea. Something very significant to show this is for life, a covenant. And if you turn to Exodus 24. Exodus 24, another ceremony. Man, time just flies. How many years have we been married? Exodus 24, verses 6, 7, and 8. Okay, now this is after the giving of the Ten Commandments, the Mosaic covenant. Okay. Exodus 24, verse 6. Moses took half of the blood. They made some offerings. He collected the blood. He took half the blood, put it in basins, and half of the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And he took the book of the covenant, the Mosaic law, and read in the audience of the people. And they said, "All that the Lord has said, we will do and be obedient." They said, "Yeah, I like those terms. We will keep those terms." And what did Moses do, verse 8? He took the blood that he had in basins, half of it was sprinkled on the altar, signifying, that's God, signifying God is party to this covenant, the altar. Put the blood on the altar, God's a party. Read it, the covenant, read the book, and the people say, "Yes, we agree." In verse 8, Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, "Behold, the blood of the covenant which the Lord hath made with you concerning all these words." So that symbolized now the people, Israel, are now bound by this covenant. They become his covenant people. Which covenant? In this case, it's the Mosaic covenant. They're a party to it. So those are some ceremonies that were customary in those days. All of them signifying the high status of a covenant. Now, how many have heard the word, the verse, "And thou makest a vow, be sure to fulfill it. Do not make a vow and break it." Vow there, it's the same idea as covenant. That's some of the background to why, I think it's in Ecclesiastes, that said, don't make a covenant or a vow unless you intend to fulfill it. So what are some implications of how God sees a covenant? How he views it? What are some implications? Now, like an application, what does this mean? How do I respond? How do I change my life, my behavior, my thoughts in relationship to this? Do we make covenants? How many are members? Members of Emmanuel Baptist Church, you have agreed to what? The church covenant. You have said, "I will do these things, and I will receive these things. I will pray for one another. I will be slow to take offense and quick to reconcile. I will seek to keep everyone's reputation held high. I will pray for the pastor. I will try to, I'll do certain, some of the obvious things. I will not use alcohol as a beverage. I will not smoke tobacco or use illegal drugs. And, I'll assemble together. We'll contribute cheerfully and regularly to the maintenance of the church and the furtherance of the gospel." All those things. If you remember, you've agreed to do that. It's a covenant. That's probably why in the bylaws it says every member will review the articles of faith, bylaws, and the covenant once a year. Why? Because we forget. We forget. Every time I've read through, the constitution we had at the former church, and it's like we kind of, went through that several times. But every time I read through it, it's like, man, I don't remember reading that. Ooh, we're not doing this. Oh, I need to do this. Because it's like reading through the Bible. I read it once. I don't need to read it again. No. Keep reading it. How else? What's an implication? God is faithful. We're going to get into, Lord willing, the covenants that God has made with man. God is faithful. He always keeps his word. Whether it's labeled a covenant or it's just a promise, God always keeps his word. And we should be like God too. Now, we can't be perfect, But we should strive to keep our word. In business dealings, as an employer or an employee, we should keep our word. If you're an employee and you have agreed to work whatever, hours, job, do whatever, you should keep your word. You agreed. That's a covenant without all the ceremonies. You said yes. You signed the application, whatever. In our business dealings, you should keep your word. And I remember when I was just a upper teen, and I heard somebody say that we were getting flowers for something or plants for shrubbery back in Ohio, and went to a Corso's landscaping. Okay, they had a big landscaping place, and they had a store, and they sold flowers and all that stuff. I remember going there, and the guy said, tell them it's for a church, because they'll give you a deal. I'm like, really? Never thought of that. And I went, and I told them, and I'm not a good salesman, so, you know, don't. That's why Martha's doing the talking tomorrow. I didn't mention that. Tomorrow we're going to a real estate agent to talk about making an offer on that land. So it's going to be a hard sell. So I'm letting Martha do the talking because she's much more persuasive than me. I remember hearing the guy behind the counter said, church? Said, they're the worst ones to do business with. They never pay their bills. I'm like, really? That was news, as a teenager, that was news to me. In our personal matters, you say you're going to do something, follow through. Do it. Say you're not going to do it, then don't do it. Our family matters. You make a promise to your kids, to your husband, wife, keep your word. James 5:12. If you turn there. The last verse for tonight, James 5:12. James 5:12, but above all things, my brethren, or any Christian, above all things, the most important thing I'm saying right now on this topic, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea, and your nay, nay, lest you fall into condemnation. Saying, don't bring God's name into it, because if you break it, you'll fall into condemnation. But instead, let your yes be yes. You don't have to swear on a stack of Bibles. You don't have to sign in triplicate and have three different lawyers look at it to see, yep, this is an ironclad guarantee, ironclad contract. If you say yes, let it be yes. If you say no, let it be no. And it's repeated, this he's quoting from the gospel where Jesus said, just be honest. Live your word. Keep your word. Back it up. We should reflect God in all of our doings. And God is a truthful God. There's no deception, no deceit with God. We should seek to be that way too. Not trying to get out, find some wiggle room. Just keep your word. Be open, be honest. We'll be looking at the covenants that God has made with man. Looking to see what do they reveal about God? What do they reveal about man? God Almighty, we praise you that you've given us your word. Father, help us by your grace to live a life that reflects well upon you, that is obedient. And Father, help us to be truthful and honest in all of our doings. Father, we do so desiring that you would be glorified. Thank you for these who have gathered tonight. I ask your blessing upon them and bless our time as we remember and celebrate what Christ has done on our behalf. In his name we pray.